How we teach our horses to learn can have a huge impact on their attitude and how well they advance. In this interview with Dr. Steve Peters and Martin Black, you'll learn about long-term potentiation and the keys and benefits of this optimal outcome from scientific and empirical standpoints. How do we best do this? How do we keep horses engaged and teach them to move forward with their new knowledge? To make his case, Dr. Peters gets down to the nitty-gritty. He describes what learning looks like on a cellular level. We're not talking about rote memorization or short-term memory here, but rather the absorption of knowledge for the long haul. It's an outcome called long-term potentiation, and it happens in humans and horses, so examples here will concern both. First, consider a typical lazy learning moment. You're listening, half-heartedly taking notes, and thinking in a distracted way about what you're hearing. On a molecular level, the neurochemical glutamate is enabling the transfer of sodium from a presynaptic neuron to a postsynaptic neuron through so-called AMPA receptors. It's a weak synapse, and it is not enough to cause long-term potentiation. Now consider a moment when you're in the front row at the edge of your seat. That engaging moment is followed by more reading and discussion with classmates. You feel good about your ability to expound on the topic, and on a molecular level, an increased concentration of glutamate has let even more sodium through receptors of the postsynaptic cell. More sodium there causes a repulsion of a plug of magnesium that previously had been blocking another type of receptor called the NMDA receptor. With the magnesium bumped out, more sodium and now calcium molecules rush from one neuron to the other. Calcium, in turn, activates more intracellular cascades. In other words, there is greater activity and the connection strength of the presynaptic and postsynaptic neurons increase. That's long-term potentiation. But now let's pick up as Dr. Peters talks more about a lazy learning moment.
For a human, if they're just skimming an article, paying attention to a lecture one time, whatever, glutamate leaks out, fits in here, glutamate fits in there, glutamate fits in there, glutamate fits in there. So you're just skimming something, you're just looking at something, you're getting a general idea. And if you're nervous or you're not paying attention, this will still happen. And once you get glutamate to leak in there, this gate opens. So this little gate will open up and sodium will be able to get in, Na. So sodium can then get in, boom, it fires, and you have a connection. But it's a weak connection. So when you try to think about something, you may have a memory trace. Right. If you stop studying or you get nervous or you think about, somebody thinks about their girlfriend or boyfriend, then this is really pretty weak. Or if they get pressured and they think about something else, they almost shut the system down. But what we know is if through repetition, right, this right here is blocked by this magnesium. That just sticks in there. So sodium tries to get in there, can't really. Calcium can't get in there because we got this magnesium block. So we got one little gate that's letting sodium in. So as long as you just don't take this seriously, or if you get revved up, or anything interferes with your learning, you'll simply get a connection. So you can go back and kind of have a general idea, but you'll never notice.
In relation to the horse, this is a horse that's not quite out of the comfort zone. You've changed his routine a little bit. Not on the high alert. So he might be switching his tail and resentful.
So it'll make these little connections. So in the brain you'll have, some dendrites coming off and connecting over here to dendrites over here. And so you'll just kind of have this elementary kind of connection down the line with that. But if the next day we come back, we get the horse's attention, we get a person's attention, they go to the library, they kind of become less distracted and a little more focused. Boy, this information seems easier today because they already developed a pathway. So even more sodium gets in, right? And they're more comfortable. They say, well, I got a week until my test. I'm just going to take some quiet time here. And they keep doing this. So we keep, so the analogy would kind of be like keeping the horse alert. You can't let them go sleep on you, right? Because then you, all the sodium will just drift off, right? You can't get them too riled up because you'll cut the system off.
What do you mean you'll cut the system off?
Well, you're not going to get any sodium. The amygdala will kick in, fear will kick in, and when you get too anxious, then you quit learning altogether. But if you get them there and get their attention and bring them back, then you can come back.
When you're pushing them to the panic, the self-preservation kicks in and
right,
they and react instead of respond.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then you bring them back, and now they're getting pretty comfortable with this area, so you're bringing more and more sodium. Actually, you'll eventually reach a critical mass. You'll have enough sodium in here that it does what's called depolarization. It'll the electrical charge will depolarize and pop this magnesium out of there. Once that magnesium block is out, calcium comes in there. And once calcium gets in, now you got a second messenger. So if you can get the calcium in there, reach that point, then what happens is calcium will go and pick up these little proteins, carry them to the outside of the cell, and make a new gate. So they'll make a couple of new gates. Now, if you have new gates, you get much more sodium in. Now, it's easier to get sodium in. And the calcium also sprouts growth. So now we're getting dendrites coming off here. The little neurons, just like we had before, like here, but now you're getting them everywhere. So, and this is almost now an automatic channel. It's like a super highway. You just have to suggest it. And the horse knows what you're talking about, or the person knows it.
When you say suggest, what do you mean?
If you're studying for an ancient history test on China or something, all I have to say is China. And all this information is right there at your...
So on a, that's a molecular... Information is kind of on a molecular level, you're saying?
Yeah.
So that if you can kickstart a conversation on China or on some specific area of information, that's what we're looking at in terms of your ability to expound on the subject. And
right,
if that's what you're talking about, how?
Long-term potentiation almost locks it into your memory. And then, if somebody talks about, because you got these dendrites out here, if somebody talks about Japan, you may not know anything about Japan, but it, also all the similarities with China are at your disposal. Now,
if you were to translate this to what a horse would doing, it would be like, for instance, working on opening and closing a gate, and then if the horse sees a gate in the next opportunity, the next day, he's like, oh yeah, I know how to do that. Is that an appropriate comparison?
I think a better example is this horse that is played in the herd. And he knows how to run and turn and keep up and rate the other horses. When that horse goes to working cattle, he already knows when to change leads and when and how to stop and turn and all that. Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people miss, is why I'd like to bring that up. Because it's not something that we train them to do necessarily. This Mustang that has no training, he might not have the athletic ability, he might not have the desire of the better bred horses, but he has the experience versus the horse raised in the backyard that has a fancy pedigree and
but isn't exposed to those learning opportunities.
That hasn't had the previous learning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Training, so, if you want to call it that, but learning opportunities.
Those horses in the wild then have set up, so they've got this calcium, this long-term potentiation built in on a lot of stuff already. So if you have that backyard horse or one that's kept in the stall all the time, all you've got are these sodium connections. So you have a lot of weak links that you can get them to do stuff, but it's a weak link. If you take them somewhere new, forget about it. They have no reserve. But you take the horse who's had this long-term potentiation take place, and you put them in a new situation, they can figure it out. Not always, but I mean, they have a much better array of behaviors to draw from.
But this is learning to learn.
This is learning to learn.
And Martin, if you were to translate that not to a horse that's learning in the wild, but to a horse that you're working with, you would say that because of the, you know, alert, active learning that you put them through over time, you've reared them to a stage where they can confront any new situation with tools to handle themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you have exposed them to opportunity after opportunity in the right brain chemical environment so that they don't panic and they don't shut down.
Yeah, I don't really like using the Mustang because I've kind of learned that people think we're talking up Mustangs. I'm not talking up Mustangs and saying they're better horses. Mm. And I think that's turned some people off. Mm. You know, the immediates think Mustangs can do things that or good bred horses can't do, and they get resentful to that. But the point I'm trying to make is not that you have to have a Mustang, but a horse that has the opportunity
to be a horse.
Ranch horses have, to grow up in adverse terrain, mm-hmm. and learn to separate different grasses that they eat, and mm-hmm. and all the things that horses learn in a natural environment. That's really what I'm talking about, is a more natural environment as opposed to an artificial environment in a barnyard.
I mean, as a mom, for instance, I would tell my kids to go out and play. And that's how I was raised, too. Go out, amuse yourself, discover the world in terms of the outdoors. Isn't that comparable? I mean, mm-hmm. go out and, you know, get your thumb bloody with a hammer. Mm-hmm. I bet you won't do it next time.
Wrestle with the neighbor kids and
learn how to start a fire and mm-hmm. put it out.
Mm-hmm. So here's what happens. The learning theory people say, well, oh, no, our horses learn. You know, we get after them, we drill the hell out of them, we put tie downs on them, we force them. The best they can get is just a sodium-linked weak link there. Those horses will be good only at those things that they made them do, right? So they would argue, well, look, these horses learn. What are you talking about? But they don't learn. It's like the difference between a guy who takes a course and gets a D- because he looked in the book every once in a while, or someone who's so intimidated by the information that they shut down, versus somebody who got straight A's and they're starting to become an expert in an area. So that learning has a different quality. This long-term potentiation has a different quality than the learning that's sodium-based alone.
And what you're referring to is the learning theory. That would be the same process in the horse as the warm and fuzzies that never get their horses out of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
It teaches obedience, but it doesn't teach what I would consider critical thinking, the ability to operate.
In the human and in the horse, if you don't have this long-term potentiation learning taking place, you can never, you don't adapt to the next challenge.
Right.
So you have some tools, and you can keep this long-term potentiation and build challenge on top of challenge on top of challenge. But you can't do that in the warm fuzzy horse. The warm fuzzy horse is only going to be maybe warm fuzzy in the round pen. Maybe only warm fuzzy at a walk in around your home or on a trail that's familiar. But you put them in a situation that's new, they don't have the same kind of learning that prepares them.
Well, so they might look, they might see what you refer to as the obedience, the success of that type of training, but what they overlook or don't know what to do about is the resentment that comes along with that. Mm-hmm. And that's why I shy away from that. The warm fuzzy way is there's a lot of negatives. That's as dangerous as a scared horse, as far as I'm concerned. This horse that's resentful can kick you, can run over you, and put you in the hospital just the same as the scared horse, this cowboy horse, this wild horse that's trying to protect himself. Doesn't matter if he kicks you because it's resentment or out of fear, the hospital bill is going to be the same.
And hold on, because I just had a point on that. So you kind of set it up for that resentful horse, that some sodium's gone through, but you had to kind of get after him. And you'd like to keep them in a framework or get after them or whatever you need to do so that you can keep that sodium going. And the horse, in its resistance, is actually shutting down from ever getting there. And if you let them shut down, then you just let that unruly student who's throwing spitballs and writing letters and giving them to his friend, you never take him the discipline necessary to say, hey, knock it off, pay attention, so that you could ever get to this. Right. So the horse is actually not allowing you to get to that next stage with that resentment if you let him get away with it.
A couple questions on how I can see my readers saying, well, this is all lovely theory, but what are examples of what I would see in my horse when I have resentful and simply obedient, and how can I, let's assume that my typical reader is your typical warm and fuzzy. Can you see some situations where the behavior would be X, Y, and Z, and how you would say, this isn't going to work, and go down a different path?
Well, the point I'm trying to make, and this science just drives, puts more science, more proof to my message all along, is the most productive learning is in between this warm and fuzzy that we're talking about, and this is a science to verify that that's not the best, in between what we're talking about here and the panic where they shut down and go into reactive mode. They don't learn there, they don't learn here. Mm-hmm. So as far as the readers, I think there's a false sense of security presented by a lot of people that says just pet them and feed them treats and bond with them and build a relationship with them in this area. But that's not for learning. If you want to have a friend in the backyard, yeah, you can build a relationship, but don't think that's where they're going to learn the best. Mm-hmm. They're going to learn very little there, and there's some baggage that comes along with it, the main thing being resentment, which can get you hurt.
So what I'm trying to get you to do, Martin, is to quantify resentment. What do you see in a horse when, because they don't see it. So you see resentment, even I think, when Steve was working with Brooke, the bay horse he brought up to the clinic, what are you seeing that you think your clients aren't seeing in horse behavior?
Well, reputation. If you do the same thing, it's like my A-test. If you do the same thing over and over again, you can create different emotions in the horse. Resentment, they can get mad, they can get frustrated, which is shutting down. They're not learning. They're taking a defensive stance when they do those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that if you build on that and then try to push them, that's when they kick and become more protective or more violent and can hurt people.
Yeah. So that.
So I don't even want to start down that road to build the resentment. So if I see a horse that's starting to get bored or starting to get resentful, you either need to stop before that happens or as early as you can identify that happens, or push them to the next level.
So define bored and resentful and what it looks like. That's what I'm trying to get you to do. Swish and tail. I mean, I'm asking a stupid question because I think that people see it 20 minutes later than you do.
Well, the problem is you don't know how far too far is till you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know where the panic level is on this horse until you've been there. And each horse is going to be different. So where it is, it's not a standard, mm-hmm. Sign, but it has to do with environmental things going on around us.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to learn this is experience. You know, your first horse, your only horse you've ever had, that's when you're the most vulnerable, you're the most uneducated, obviously. But the more you get in trouble with this, the more it makes an impression on you, and the more you learn. It's a process, and that's kind of getting off on another rabbit trail, a different rabbit trail here. But I can't tell you. You need to, it has to come from the horse. But all we can say is here's why you don't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So when you identify that this is where you're at, you need to push them out of that to the next level. Now you're going to push them too far, okay, before they break their neck on the fence. Hopefully you're going to see that this horse is getting too excited,
right,
and you need to back off. But the message that, and I'm not as worried about that. I mean, I'm talking to the brutal horse trainers, and that's another area that we need to talk about here. But your readers are going to be more the warm and fuzzies that think we don't want to get them excited.
Yeah.
And my message is yes, you need to get them out of the comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this science is backing up.
So better to essentially defuse a bomb on a daily basis than ride a ticking time bomb.
You might say that. But they need to experiment. They need to it's the same as, and you might twist this around a little bit better, but you'll understand what I'm saying. It's like the kid that never got to make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
He had a sheltered life. He never went out and got in trouble with the neighbor kids or mm-hmm. partied or anything, versus a kid that got thrown out, like most of us ranch kids did, and we learned to survive at a young age. Well, mm-hmm. Not that we're any smarter, but we learn to make decisions by exercising our better judgment,
mm-hmm.
because we got smashed and
One of the old timers, Val Geisler, he said, good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that a lot of people, they get a, if the horse gets in the panic area, they go, oh my God, what did I do? What did I do wrong? Well, I will never, ever, ever go there again. And I think trainers, because they don't want to get sued for telling people, let your horse get there, they rather, they got all these legal disclaimers on all their DVDs, don't go to step B until, you've run around the round pen 4,000 times. But I think people are not going to see this. They're not going to get encouraged to experiment with their horse. And if the horse ever gets out of something into something new they haven't seen before, they'll think they made a mistake. They'll get just as afraid as the horse when the horse gets up in there.
A young foal, you know, he has a comfort zone. But if he gets slightly outside the comfort zone, his curiosity kicks in. He becomes alert, but before he panics, he gets curious. And that's where they learn the most. There's a lot of valuable learning. As they get older, a year old isn't as curious as a foal that's 6 months old, and a two-year-old is not as curious as a yearling. And that's kind of their natural learning. You know, what a rabbit is in the brush and just little things that we might take for granted. They're taking all that in, and that's where I think it's very valuable, you know, to be in the herd and be in adverse terrain and things like that. That's the easy thing for them to learn. But as they get older, then they quit relying on that as much and they rely on experience more. Well, that's when we start in on the training to ride, at least. You can handle your foals, but you're limited to how much you can do for attention span and things. But when we start riding them, let's just say at 2 years old, they've quit using probably 90% of their learning from curiosity. Mm. So what I'm trying to do is get them slightly out of their comfort zone, so they're alert, maybe curious, maybe a little more threatened than curious, and you have to arouse that a little bit to kick in the curiosity, but you can arouse a little bit more and still get this learning, and this is what the pyramid is. But if they don't learn to exercise in this area, we don't grow that area. And what I see in the horse that...
So let me stop you for a second. Define this area.
This area between panic and comfort zone.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure.
So, and I would rather see the horse go to the panic level, or at least knock on the door of the panic level, and an experienced horse person will see knocking on the door and back off. The inexperienced horse person, they might have to go to the panic and panic the horse and then go, whoops. A curious horse, his head is up, his ears are up, his eyes are big, he's taking it in. Mm-hmm. He's not reacting in a self-preservation panic mode. He's not running, he's not fighting, not fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's where they're going to learn the most. They're out of their comfort zone. They're not panicking. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm trying to get this horse to.
And
they're the kid in the front row who's like this with their pen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not, oh crap, this is too much information. I'm never going to...
Yeah. In your experience, when you watch people, they finally get their horse to its being engaged and curious. The rider senses that and gets scared because they feel that it is getting too close to the scary part of riding.
Mm-hmm.
So they back down and dumb down and dull down their horse because they don't even want it to get curious, because curious for the average warm and fuzzy rider is scary.
Well, it's you can't you can't make a horse get curious. I can make a horse intimidated, which is real close to the same results. In other words, you can put a horse in a curious state of mind, which is somewhat of a threat, but the horse isn't taking fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
They take in a lot. But that's only good for so long, and the horse is going to lose interest. He's going to say, well, I'm not threatened by that dark spot on the hill over there. It's not a bear. It's not coming to me. So he'll go back to grazing. And you can only move that black spot so much, that flag or whatever it is, so much, and they're going to go, that doesn't hurt. But if if I lose the curiosity, then I can bring in more intimidation. more fear into that horse, and he won't ignore it, he won't accept it. And that's how we sensitize horses, is with intimidation or a low level of fear. And that's what we have to do to train them. And that's the thing that a lot of people think, that's a bad word. I don't want to intimidate my horse. You're not going to train your horse if you can't intimidate him, because all you're going to do is get whatever you can get out of curiosity, and then you're back to the teaching with reputation, which along with that comes the baggage of resentment. So then the only way you deal with resentment is you discipline them, and that's just a fight, basically, on a low level. But people accept that because they think the horse has to be obedient, you know, I mean, like your child, and we try to put it in human terms. But the whole thing is they've accepted that way of training because we never scared the horse. We can feel good because we never scared the horse. So, the message is the same. The thing I like is here's some more fresh science to back up what we've been saying all along. Yeah. I'm not saying anything different.
Yeah.
It's just fresh science that I think if we take this fresh science and throw it back in on our same message, it just gives more validation.
Yeah. And it actually shows you that, you know, people would like it to be easy. What's step A, what's step B, what's step C? And I'll be the first to acknowledge, you know, this is, one, it's tough to understand this chemistry, and then two, it's tough to recognize what's going on in the drugstore in your horse about that experience. So you got to study your ass off, which a lot of people don't necessarily want to get to that point, but what's so cool about this is just it's evidence-based. I mean, we didn't make this up to say, you know, blood and oxygen gets through the brain because the heart pumps. Who can argue with that, you know? So it's much easier now to see, you're telling me the horse learned, but the horse learned on a sodium basis, not on a long-term potentiation basis, which created all these dendrites, and not necessarily anything that's going to stick completely. And if I try to, I think evidence-based horsemanship, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Martin, if there's one message that's always been there, it's a horse has to be in the right chemical state to optimize their learning.
To optimize it is a key word there.
Yeah.
They can learn through repetition, they can learn through fear, but they're limited in what they can learn. And the amount of time that it takes for them to learn it. I'm all about efficiency. So if we want to be the most efficient in our training program, you know, whether it's a performance horse or just trying to get the horse across the bridge or across water, you know, we can make a week-long project out of getting the horse in the horse trailer or something like that. Or if we understand this better, we don't have to be late for the show. We can go out in 20 minutes, have them in the trailer, or less maybe. And that's where I think everybody will benefit from. It's not a cowboy thing. It's not a horse trainer thing. It's, you know, like we've said all along, again, is anybody, a veterinarian or anybody.
And, you know, it's funny how quick people want to shut this off because they say, oh, that's natural horsemanship. We've done is stepped in and said, no, it's not. This is science.
It's science. Exactly.
And our science is actually above and beyond one school of thinking.